And now, everybody, I have a rare treat for you. You're about to meet the man that I regard as the most principled person in government. He is the former mayor of Cleveland, and he is presently, that word slipped out, but hopefully someday he will be president. He is presently a congressman from Ohio and the architect of the newly proposed Department of Peace. Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Will tell us a success story about how the people of Cleveland, and with his help, stopped the privatization of their electrical system. Congressman Kucinich.
Thank you very much, Lila, and thank you for mentioning the proposal which I have for a Department of Peace. And after you hear my presentation about what happened in Cleveland a few years ago, you'll know why I feel so strongly about advocating the cause of peace. This evening, I want to, first of all, before I begin, acknowledge the presence of two individuals. One is Bernie Sanders and his wife, Jane. I served with Bernie in the Congress, and I am proud to serve with you in the Congress of the United States, Bernie. Thank you. Thank you, Jane. And also, there's an individual here who was a key player in my administration when I was at City Hall. He's going to be very upset with me that I'm introducing him, but it's okay. Bob Weissman is here, and Bob was the kind of person who made sure that we always did the right thing. And Bob's retired to California, something that I did 20 years ago, but had a chance to come back. I'm going to be talking about an attempt to privatize the city's electric system. Cleveland's a wonderful community. I'm privileged to represent it in the United States Congress. And before I get into the story of what happened in Cleveland, I'll tell you a little bit about why I do what I do. I believe that our lives do not exist only for ourselves, that we are here to serve others, and that as we recognize our essential interdependence, we understand how service to others becomes a high calling, whether we serve in public life or whether we serve as doctors, nurses, teachers, in the many different capacities in which people become part of a society. I believe that one person can make a difference. In fact, it's only one person can make a difference. But that each person who is willing to stand up and speak out in linking with others of like mind can change not only the history of a community, but can change the history of a country. Contrary to the theology of the moment in politics, I believe government can work. And that people should expect that government work. And people should expect that government work for them. When you're told government doesn't work, be assured that government is working. And the real question is, the determinative question is, not whether government can work, but for whom is government working? Who owns America? Who owns L.A., Cleveland, Chicago, New York? The three things I want you to remember about me as I go into the story of Cleveland. First, I grew up in Cleveland. The oldest of seven, lived in 21 different places by the time I was 17, including a few cars before that became fashionable in America. Secondly, I was a 4'9", third-string varsity quarterback. Fourth is I started in politics in 1967 at the age of 20. Now, Ellen Miller mentioned Mark Hanna, the father of money politics, actually helped to finance the campaign of Mark Hanna in, when he ran and beat William Jennings Bryan. To tell you a little bit more about Cleveland, a city I love, it's probably the only place in America where there is a statue of Mark Hanna, the father of money politics, and rightly so, because Mark Hanna was the nemesis of a mayor of Cleveland who in 1903 founded one of the first electric systems, publicly owned electric systems in the United States. The mayor's name was Tom L. Johnson, and he was part of a progressive movement in this country of progressive mayors of cities like Detroit and Toledo and others people who believe that the public interest ought to be paramount, that the people have a right to own parks, school systems, water systems, sewer systems, and electric systems. And he said that he believed in public ownership, because if you do not own them, if you don't own these public service facilities, they will in time own you. They will corrupt your institutions and destroy your liberties. That was Tom Johnson about 100 years ago. Cleveland has had two electric systems for the last 90-some years. One system, privately owned by the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, and another that was publicly owned by the people of Cleveland. And those systems have competed side by side in a third of the city over much of those 90 years. The benefits of a public system, we who are customers of a public system understand cheaper electricity, in Cleveland 25% less, possibility of economic development because of business and manufacturing economy have a lower cost for electricity. They can improve their bottom line, service the city facilities. Our Muni Light system serves 72 city facilities, saves the taxpayers a lot of money. Matter of fact, you might be interested in knowing there's over 2,000 municipal systems in the United States, all of which are serving small communities, some large, L.A., for example, and their job is to enable the people to keep their electric rates low and get something in return in terms of public accountability. Now, private systems, what are they about? They're about profit. They're about returns to shareholders, return on investment. They're about large salaries for their officers. In 1976, the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company went on an aggressive program to build nuclear power plants in the Cleveland area. Those nuclear power plants developed into serious cost overruns. The utility went into financial problems. When they went to license their utility, their nuclear power plant, they had to go through an antitrust review of the Atomic Safety and Licensing Commission, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And in that antitrust review, there was an unprecedented ruling. I'm going to get to that ruling in a minute. While that review was underway, a drumbeat occurred in Cleveland City Council to sell the city's electric system. This drumbeat included the implication that the system was losing money and couldn't make money, that it would hurt the city financially, and the city was no stranger to the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company because the city had a lawsuit going against the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company for trying to interfere in the operation of its electric system. But nevertheless, even though you had this dirty competition going, both newspapers in Cleveland, we now have one, TV stations, radio stations, both political parties, all were part of this drumbeat to sell the electric system. Well, in fact, the system was sold in 1976, and it appeared that the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company got a monopoly that it had sought for many, many years. I was then clerk of courts in the city of Cleveland. It's an elected position, administrator of the courts. I was at home reflecting on this sad occasion of a publicly owned electric system being taken over by a monopoly. I got out a book about Cleveland's history called Cleveland, the Best Kept Secret by George Condon. And in it, he relates the difficulty that Tom Johnson had at the beginning of the 20th century trying to establish a municipal electric system, and how the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company fought him and tried to block even the possibility of forming a system. And as I read this book about Cleveland's history, I got a sense of Tom Johnson in a moment. It was intuitive, perhaps, but I got this powerful, intuitive sense, almost as though I'd heard his voice call out to me, "Don't let them sell that system." Now, I was clerk of courts at the time. I wasn't involved in the council. I certainly hadn't been, wasn't the mayor. And yet I had this sense of that I had to do something, that even though it was a done deal, it seems that the most joy in life is going into a situation where everyone thinks the game is rigged and it's over. And then going into it and applying everything that you know and putting your heart and soul into it and turning it around. So I had this sense of duty to the people of Cleveland, but also to the history of Cleveland and to what it meant to have a publicly owned electric system. So the first thing I started to do was I analyzed the terms of the sale. And I determined that the city of Cleveland was giving this system away, that part of the money was to pay for electricity, which the city had purchased from CEI, because our system was breaking down on occasion. I'll tell you why in a moment. So we had to purchase power from CEI, and we were going to pay off the light bill with the proceeds of the sale of the light system. And then the rest was going to go back to the city over a 30-year period, again, to pay more light bills. And a system worth over $250 million was being sold, I found, for $88 million. Well, we organized the people right away. And when you have something like that, where you feel you need to do something, you bring people together, and that's what we did. And we organized the petition drive. And we repealed the sale of the light system. And we had people come together in these rallies, and those rallies were so great because we're talking about an electric system, and it was about light. But it wasn't only about physical light. There was another light we were thinking about as we sang, "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine." Yeah, here! "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine." And we got together and we sang, and we knew that it mattered. It mattered to people to have cheaper electricity. It mattered to people to have public ownership. It mattered to 300 workers at Muni Light. And it mattered that this whole process occurred without any public input. Without any public input at all. But of course it mattered to CEI as well. Because they were able to, in one fell swoop, eliminate competition, increase utility rates, and pay off this emerging and ballooning debt from their building of nuclear power plants. Just as this effort to save the electric system started to take off, sitting in my living room watching the Scottsboro Boys TV special, and I just went up to adjust the set, and at that moment I heard this, the house shook, and I heard this pop, and I turned around and I saw a little circular hole in the wall right where I had been a moment ago, right? And it turned out that someone had fired a high-power rifle shot, which went through the interior wall of the house and through the other interior wall and then out the back of the house. One of the problems when you get involved, as all of us know, we're activists, is, you know, it does have an effect on disquieting your home life. Now, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had a ruling shortly after that, which said the following, that CEI schemed to put Muni Light out of business. This was a ruling from their antitrust review as a licensing condition for CEI getting their license to operate nuclear power plant. They schemed to put Muni Light out of business. They blocked legislative action to make repairs on, they blocked legislative action in city council, which would have repaired boilers so the city's system could have worked and produced its own electricity. Then they sold power to Muni Light at 3 times what they were selling anyone else. And they stopped Muni Light from being able to buy power from anyone else. And when Muni Light asked for emergency power, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission found the transfer of power from CEI to Muni was operated in such a way as to cause outages on the Muni system. And then when that happened, they'd go to the media and they'd say, "This system doesn't work very well, does it? Outage around Christmas time ruined your Christmas, didn't Muni Light? Outage around the 4th of July, Memorial Day. Boy, you just can't have a decent holiday with this light system." And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission found out that a number of outages, these blackouts, had been deliberately caused. And of course, CEI would turn around and attack the publicly owned system as if to say, "Look, this system doesn't work." And then demanded that it be sold to them. Well, I had the temerity to ask, "Well, if it's not worth anything, why do you want it so bad?" The then mayor of Cleveland, when he heard of the NRC ruling, which, you know, ordered CEI to stop its tactics and found them in violation of numerous provisions of federal antitrust law. His reply was, well, now CEI has to buy the system. And not only the system, but also to discharge what was now a $325 million antitrust damage suit. Well, we had the petitions going, and people were out in the street. We got 30,000 signatures. And when it became clear that those signatures would block the sale, well, I took the next step, and that's when my campaign for mayor started. I ran for mayor with a promise to save the electric system. And when I announced for mayor, the day that I announced for mayor, police intercepted a fellow who was visiting from out of town, who came to our rally with a 6-inch knife. As I said, home life was a little bit difficult. Now, I ended up being the youngest person ever elected mayor of a big city. And I was sworn in. When I left office, I was the oldest person ever to serve. But I ended up being sworn in just a few days after the election. That's the way it was in Cleveland at the time. And my first act in office was to cancel the sale and to keep the antitrust lawsuit alive. A few days after I took office, CEI went to federal court and got an order for the city to immediately pay a $10 million light bill, and they got an order to be able to attach city equipment. So they went around tagging city equipment. Now, we were able to cut spending drastically and paid off the bill. As we were doing that, a group of business leaders who were allied with the utility planned a recall election. This is 1 month after I was in office. And, of course, they waited until I made some dumb mistake. They didn't have to wait long. I hired a police chief from California, San Francisco, I told everyone he was the best police chief in America, and a month later, after a dispute, I fired the best police chief in America, and that wasn't bad enough. I fired him on Good Friday, or during the High Holy Days, I guess it would have been also at that time. You can kind of get into politics to the point of where everything else in the world you forget. And it didn't occur to me that people may be thinking of some other things in their lives other than the drama that was going on in Cleveland City government. And so when I reached out and fired the chief live on the 6 o'clock news, you didn't need any formal charges for a recall. I gave people enough fuel. So on the eve of the recall election, I was given a chance for a reprieve. That reprieve is, Mr. Mayor, if you will sell this electric system, oh yes, you sell the electric system, we'll call off the recall, we will tell the people, don't vote to kick you out of office. Well, I that was my first chance to be relieved of duty. I didn't take it, but it was a chance. And in the third election I had in 10 months, the recall, primary to get elected mayor, general election I won by 1%. A recall, 10 months later, I won by 236 votes. That's a mandate in my book. But I'll tell you, it made for a rotten home life. The government was being destabilized. There were threats of strike. There was continuous attacks in the media, all sell Muni Light. Council even predicted the city would have financial trouble if the system wasn't sold. And they were going to make sure of it. In 1978, in October, I was getting ready to greet a friend of mine, Carl Stokes, who was the first African-American mayor of a major city. He had been mayor of Cleveland. He was a friend of mine who was now working, at that time was working in New York as a award-winning newscaster. I was waiting for him in my upstairs study, and all of a sudden, I just passed out. I woke up, and I heard my wife calling to Carl downstairs, and there was blood in my lap and blood all over the room. Carl Stokes picked me up and took me down to the ambulance. I was rushed to the hospital, semi-conscious, lost about 6 pints of blood. And what had happened is I had a, believe it or not, I mean, with this kind of a job, how could anybody get an ulcer? But I had an ulcer that had exploded. But that afternoon, I was supposed to be the Grand Marshal in a parade in the African-American community. A U.S. Senate subcommittee report on organized crime, buttressed by reports from the FBI and state police in Ohio, Maryland, and New York, determined that on that afternoon, when I was in the parade, I was going to be the target of an assassination attempt in this parade in the African-American community. Now, I spent time in the hospital. City Council was speculating that I really didn't have a medical illness, that in fact I'd lost my mind, and that that I was in a straitjacket in a ward somewhere. I probably should have been, but wasn't. But anyhow, I took a month vacation to Florida, and I came back to the airport, met by the chief of police, who instructed me that in fact there was this effort on, an ongoing effort to try to do away with the elected mayor. And I wondered, you know, and he greeted me from the at the airport, saying, I said, how bad is it? He said, I wouldn't sell you life insurance. Well, the banks began to put a squeeze on the city, and I ran the city on a cash basis for a year, no loans. I paid off the electric bill, but we had loans that had been taken out, short-term loans that had been taken out by previous administrations that were due on December 15th. And the banks were balking on renewing the city credit. I asked for a rollover on the short-term loans. $15 million in loans had been taken out by the previous mayor. But the bank wouldn't refinance it. And the city was facing default on the loans unless the banks refinanced. December 15th, 1978, screaming front-page headlines in the Plain Dealer. Cleveland Trust, pay up. Bank would relent if Muni Light was sold. Behold. So I had a meeting that morning after I read the headlines, and I'm a vegetarian today. I couldn't, when I had my steak and eggs then, I had trouble holding it down. But I met with the head of the city council and the head of the bank, Cleveland Trust, who came to Cleveland from Pacific Gas and Electric, and asked for a renewal of the credit. In that meeting, I was told that, sure, you can have the credit renewed. As a matter of fact, we'll give you $50 million more worth lending power. There's only one thing you have to do. Guess what that was? Right, sell Muni Light. Well, I said, I wasn't going to do that. At 11 o'clock, the Cleveland Press, what was then our afternoon paper, came out and had a story quoting the only other business leader was in that meeting, saying that the president of the bank was very nice to me. He just said, we'll renew your loan, just sell Muni Light. At noon, the council had a special meeting where they passed legislation authorizing the sale of the electric system again. And one of the councilmen stood up and said, if the banks can run this city, the banks can run this country. And he wasn't going to vote for something which represented an ultimatum that he thought went out when a certain world leader died. Everywhere I went that day, I'm hearing, sell, sell, sell. It was like the whole town was in an auction. It was like this word sell was coming out of the, up from the street grates and out of the walls. And it was in the ether. Sell. Live on the 6 o'clock news again. We do things there and most things in broad daylight. The city council majority leader was on. And he had said that the mayor has the legislation on his desk right now to solve the city's financial problems. But there's only one thing he has to do. Guess what that was? So we went on. I said, I was on the other, in another studio, said no, wouldn't sell. 7 o'clock, I take a break, have this dream about, Tom Johnson. And it had a discussion with him about not giving up and staying with this effort to save the light system. Well, I had until midnight to sign the agreement, and the bankers were waiting just to see if, I'd finally agree to sell. And TV in Cleveland was running this countdown. It was like New Year's, with the countdown to default. And news teams were there from around the country and around the world. And, Cleveland, is it going to be the first city to default, or will Dennis sell? and at 11:45, a TV station broadcast a report that he talked to two Cleveland Trust executives who said, all I have to do is sell the light system, they'd renew the city's credit. At noon, we went into at midnight, we went into default. The next day, I was in front of Cleveland Trust, and I withdrew my life savings, which then was about $8,900. I have a brother who's had a history of mental problems, and as I later explained to the media around the world, because at the moment that I was withdrawing money from a bank, he was robbing a bank uptown. Swear to God. Swear to God. I love my brother, and he perhaps has a sense of drama that's better than mine. So I had to explain, and Walter Cronkite,
a bizarre set of circumstances in Cleveland. The mayor withdrew his money from a bank, and his brother robbed a bank at the same time.
So, but while that's going on, I have attorneys who are starting to research the connection between Cleveland Trust and the electric company. And we found out that there were four interlocking directorates, that Cleveland Trust, together with National City Bank, held 2.5% of the common stock, that they were the depositor for the electric system, that the trust fund of CEI was in that bank, that the CEI's pension fund was in that bank. I wrote a complaint to the Justice Department, demanded a Justice Department investigation. CEI then made a public announcement. And what they said was, we never wanted Muni Light. Cleveland Trust, public announcement. We never asked for it to be sold. They even took out ads to that effect. The city council president who was in the meeting and was quoted on page one said, the president never asked for Muni Light. He never said it. The council majority leader, who was live on the 6 o'clock news, said he was misquoted. And the president said the lights must have dazzled him. Cleveland stayed in default. We went to the people for help. We had a special election in February of 79. Two issues. One, a tax to pay off, get us out of default. Another one with a referendum on Muni Light. TV broadcast news saying that polls had shown that 95% of the people wanted to sell the electric system. Well, Ralph Nader came in. We had a great campaign. People came together. We went to the street. And Muni Light was saved with a 68% vote. And we passed the tax to get us out of default, except the bank still wouldn't take us out of default. They wouldn't take our money. Now, I lost the election in 1979, which I suppose was God's way of rewarding me. And I accepted that because, you know, it worked out. The business community had drafted the lieutenant governor, gave him $1 million to run for mayor as the new mayor. He accepted a financial controlling board. The banks refinanced the loans, and the city went for another tax hike. And except for a brief time in city council, I spent the next 15 years out of public life. Now, I had a daughter during that time, she's the joy of my life, but home life was tough. You know, the marriage broke up. The finances were hard, almost lost my house. Couldn't get a job in the Cleveland area. 1993, however, something miraculous happened. The city of Cleveland announced that they were going to have the largest expansion of an electric system anywhere in the country. And all of a sudden, people were saying, well, wait a minute, that system would have been sold. Where's Dennis? Well, at the time, I was out here on a beach in Malibu just counting the dolphins. And in 1994, as a candidate for state senator, running under the motto, because he was right, with a light bulb behind my name, I was elected to the Senate. In 1996, with a motto that said, light up Congress, I was elected to the House. In 1998, I was named one of the worst mayors in U.S. history. In 1999, TV8 in Cleveland broadcast a special report saying that the assassination plot was linked to the effort to save Muni Light. And in the year 2000, in my primary election that I had recently, I got 95% of the votes in the city of Cleveland. Now, Cleveland Trust, the bank, is out of business. CEI has been taken over twice. The council president is now one of my supporters. The people that financed the recall, most of them are supporting me. Muni Light is still serving more and more people with 30% savings. And we're still singing that song, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Robert Kennedy, when he spoke to students at the University of Johannesburg, South Africa, in 1968, students who were facing a much more difficult time than I ever faced, because they were looking at a system that appeared to be inflexible and unchangeable. And he told them something that's always stayed with me, and I think it's really a story about how do you fight this kind of a system? Well, you stand up, you speak out, and you have to organize, and you have to believe in others, and you have to believe in yourself. And what he said was this. Each time a man or a woman stands up for an ideal, acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he or she sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples create a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. That's our commitment in Cleveland. Thank you for it being your commitment. Let's keep standing up. If you hang in there and you're willing to take a stand, you can win. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.